This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and not Jill Serkin, because she's not here. She's gone to get a cup of tea and I haven't seen her since. I don't know where she's gone. Anyway, don't worry about her. We've got another fantastic guest to talk to in the second half of the show, but we've got loads of tweets to catch up on and quite a few information emails to read out, so I'm going to do some of that. The lovely folks at Athelbray have tweeted, Vanilla Web, we'd love a Tuesday Business Bunker shout-out, please. We'll shortly be sharing the results of the poll on assessing the best way to judge student and exams. Analysis of the voting indicates an interesting view of the majority. Have a great show. We're going to be listening on catch up later. Now, Athelbray are a training company and they've been running a survey on what small and medium sized businesses think about the exam education system, GCSEs and stuff like that. And we're waiting with bated breath to see the results of that. But I can guess probably that a lot of people aren't particularly interested in GCSEs any longer.
Provided people can read, write and reason, that's really all you need.
The vast majority of employers that we talk to, when you ask them what skills they want, is attitude. You know, some basic skills and a work ethic attitude and a willingness to learn, and that's it. They'll teach everything else. Yeah. So you're absolutely right. West Kent Mind. We have got, Jules has got an email that she's going to read out later about this. It's quite a long one, but I'll just give it a quick mention now. West Kent Mind, who... the mental health charity from Sevenoaks, they say, we'd love a shout out. We have a new dates for mental health short workshops on understanding anxiety, stress and depression, and mental first aid training courses for September and October. We've got a list of those and Jules is going to read them out later on in the show, so we will do that. Terry and the team at DG East, how about a shout out for a hard working vehicle supplier suffering extreme supply issues?
Oh, I wonder what they are.
What?
The extreme supply issues.
He hasn't gone into detail, no. But he has just supplied a new Cupra Formentor.
What is that? A new what? Cupra?
Cupra Formentor.
Sounds like an Italian spoon.
I tell you what, I saw yesterday and I fell in love with it instantly.
Porsche?
I have one. No, I've had all the Porsches.
Humber?
No.
You're that age.
Well, it's funny you should say that. It was a Morgan.
I love a Morgan.
Really beautiful sweat running boards. And it was driving in front of me in Tenterton. I thought, I'm having that. I'm having one of those.
What colour was it?
It was a really horrible spearmint green, which looked fantastic.
Yeah. They're quite...
just suited the car. Do you know what I mean?
Who makes a Morgan?
Morgan.
Are they American or...?
No, they're from Brands Hatch.
Are they?
Yes.
Oh.
There's a garage down in Borough Green, I think.
Yeah, it's in Borough Green. Yeah.
What do you drive, Sue?
Car.
Basically a car. I drive a big Persia.
Good. SUV. So you can get all your stuff in the back?
No, actually, I hate it. I don't like the car. It was the only one my mother could climb into without me having to hover in and out in her 5 years. So that was the reason we bought it.
I have trouble getting out of my car even now. I have to sort of...
She gets out through the roof.
bend out there.
No, I've never really liked it. But I just can't be bothered. It's a car. It gets me crazy.
I've still got suspicious lights on mine. So you know that the ad, whatever it is...
AdBlue.
The AA man very sweetly went to the garage and popped some in.
Yeah.
But now the lights come on again. No, I phoned my garage, not the Mercedes one, but my lovely local garage, Graham, and he said, you haven't put enough in, need to go and put more in. I don't really know. No. And then there's driving in now, because the AA man only put one can in, which is about 15 quid, something like that. Should he have put more cans in? I've only got another 30.
You know what AdBlue is, don't you?
Yes, it's urine.
It's wee and distilled water. That's all it is.
Exactly. Yeah. But now there's another Paul Andrews light that's come on. These cars are just ridiculous. There's an S that's come on, a gold S.
Oh, you know what that is?
What?
You got a snake in your cat. That's what that is.
I agree. I was going
too newfangled.
Turn off all the sensors in my cars because I just, I have a puncture warning that comes up every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, that's the roads in Kent for you.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time driving around apparently not wearing my seatbelt, according to the sensor, that was bleeping every time I went round a corner. But luckily I found somebody to turn it off, so hopefully it won't come back.
Yeah, there's too much going on, isn't there now? I mean, Hillman Imp, give me a
Hillman Imp. I started with a Morris 1300.
Yeah. That's how I had my driving lessons in a Morris, what was it, 1000, is it? Was it Morris 1000?
Well, I don't know.
That was a jelly mould. That was a Morris Minor 1000.
That was
a
Morris Minor, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I had the one slightly up from that, Morris 1300.
So was that the one, did you have the estate with all the wood on?
No.
Because they were nice.
Cars now are just software with a bit of hardware attached.
Cars now are very expensive because of the software.
Even what worries me is the houses are going the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, everything. I mean, back in the 80s, I used to own a motor racing team. And even back then, engine management systems, we could change the entire performance of the car on a laptop. Yeah, you just pluck a laptop in, change the performance of the car. You might blow it up, but you could change the engine mapping very easily. Yeah,
it's all too complex.
Yeah, my loo, we've got a bathroom where the light comes on automatically when you walk in, because I did a lot of PR for hotels and hospitality because I got very swanky about the whole thing. Oh, this is nice. But when guests come and they use it, they spend 10 hours going, oh, Jules, I don't know how to turn the light off. You know, it's quite sweet. And they come out looking very sheepish. Yeah. And then they pull we've got a cord for the shower and they pull that. Then the shower comes on, it all goes mad.
That's like hotel rooms, isn't it, when you pull the cord and it's the SOS cord. Yeah. And they all rush up and drag you out of the loo while you're just about to sit down. Yeah. Not that that's ever happened to me.
I know.
Yeah, of course not.
There's an expanding burger chain, Paul Andrews, which has long held plans to open in Canterbury. It's to open its 11th restaurant tomorrow. It's the Seven Bone Burger. Don't have bones in your burger, do you? We'll be launching, maybe ground up ones, I don't know. Good for collagen, of course. We'll be launching its new branch in the city from noon and expanding. Oh, it's double. They've sent that twice. Okay. I haven't got hiccups. It's written twice, one after the other. Did you do that to trick me?
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah. I'm having my black tea. It's your Dorset tea today, so I'm on the ball. Yeah. So that's interesting. Seven Bone Burger. 11th, that must be September. Look forward to that. And then there's a project to build a 114-acre solar farm. This is where I go. I get very angry about solar farms, Sue. Across apple orchards in the East Kent countryside, it's been unveiled. International firm Green Switch Capital wants to install thousands of panels on land north of Chilham and Old Wives Lees, which are two most beautiful hamlets. Liz of Riverford lives in Old Wives Lees, as well as...
What was the cider maker there? Was it Rough Old Wife?
Yeah,
it?
Rough Old Wife.
Rough
there.
Old Wife Cider. Yeah,
and they're all there. So, it's probably his apple orchard, as well as they want to install thousands of panels on land north of Chilham and Old Wives Lees, as well as building a 2.4-metre security fence to protect the sprawling site. Official plans for the scheme, which is set to create 200 jobs in the construction phase, short term, are expected to be formally submitted in the coming days, and the site is envisaged to provide power for 15,000 homes and have a lifespan of 30 years, by which time the ground underneath will be devastated and all the wildlife will have gone. Will be the size of 86 football pitches, titled the North Court Solar Farm. Why do they call it farm, I wonder? It's a factory. It will be bisected by Lower Ensden Road and also sit between part of Chelmsford Road, the main route linking Old Wives Lees and Chartham. I'll say one thing. Can we not put solar on existing buildings? On factories, on schools, on houses? Why are we churning up green space to put solar plants?
I would agree with you. I mean, I have...
I'm glad, because I'd hit you if you didn't.
Factory. Not a large by modern stats, but I mean, it's nearly, it's over half an acre of space. And it is a sand trap. The offices are unbearable in summer, as is the warehouse. And it's got quite a lot of roof. But I've sometimes thought that it would be quite worthwhile to stick solar panels up there, but it's a very expensive project.
Well, that's the trouble, but building these...
private business.
Building these is making people money. They only last for actually about 20, 25 years, 20 generally.
I mean, my problem would be probably that the building was built in 1965 to 68. and I'd probably have to put a new roof on.
Yeah.
Are there grants?
And to be honest, the business is not, well, the building's not worth it.
Are there grants for solar now?
I don't think so.
No.
Anyway, you've had a message.
Oh, who from?
Rutland.
Really?
Yeah. They say, do you know, it's 28, 29 degrees in Rutland at the
really?
Moment.
Really?
Yeah, and there's Salamis Greek Taverna, and they've put the phone number as well, which is in... Hold on.
How sweet.
Hold on. I was bloody Google messing about. It's 31 the Broadway somewhere.
Okay.
I can't
They've actually got a Broadway. It's got to be big.
They've
got a Broadway. I mean,
yeah, no, but there's a
Mammy.
Yeah, no, there's a Broadway in the Cotswolds as well, which is just a very pretty little village. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait. Oh, how sweet of them. I shall pop along.
So there you go. Greek food, Salamis Greek Taverna, somewhere in Rutland, which is currently 29 degrees.
You do know that's almost like Greek Island, isn't it, that temperature? But also, Paul Andrews, Greek food is the perfect food for a blood group O, me, for a bird that doesn't want too much gluten, because I can have the Cleftico. I've already got it. I know what I'm having already. Just tell them. Cleftico.
I've ordered it for you.
Nice Greek salad.
Yeah.
Fab. And I'll have it delivered to the wagon.
Yeah.
Where I'll be.
It's on the way now.
Fabulous.
You need to get up there.
I can't wait to go to Rutland. I'm sure there's a hurricane. Well,
they're waiting for you. All of them are turning out. They've got a reception. They haven't had a tourist this year. They've got a tourist coming. They've turned out. The entire population of Rutland's turned out for their tourist. They're all waiting for you. Get on with it.
I can't wait. Can you hurry up and finish the show?
Yeah, no, because I want to talk to somebody really sensible first.
Tim Aker.
Yeah.
I'm not happy about that solar farm, though.
We've had enough of this nonsense.
I'm not happy about that solar farm.
I don't
farm.
Care. I want to talk to somebody sensible, so I'm going to talk to Tim.
Okay.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome for the very first time onto the Business Bunker Show, Mr. Tim Aker. And Tim is the Business Development Manager for the FSB Kent and Medway. Tim, good afternoon. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for putting up with this nonsense for an hour or so and still being here.
Very amiable.
Thank you for having me. It's been great fun.
Yeah.
I look forward to my invitation back.
you're always welcome. As you know, we're great supporters and fans of the FSB.
And members. We are members.
And we are all members of the FSB. Yeah.
I've used the lawyer a lot for business. Brilliant. And also the health thing when I can't remember what I did. Something awful. And the little nurse.
Something fell
off. The nurse rings you and everything.
Was that FSB care?
Yeah, I think it was. It was a lovely lady called Sue that phoned me.
Mm.
What about?
So you've recently joined the FSB in this role and ended up as the main man through one thing and another. So why don't you give us a brief bit of background about Tim and then talk about your role and where you see the FSB. And, you know, we're living in kind of weird times, I know. So, you know, organisations like the FSB are going to really come into their own, even though, you know, they've always been supportive of small businesses, but they really are going to come into their own over the next, you know, year or so, 18 months, as all of this hopefully starts to unfold. So tell us a little bit about Tim.
Well, a short biography.
Yeah.
You won't get War and Peace. I spent 5 years as a member of the European Parliament and local councillor. Then I went to work at Amazon and we've set up a property business.
All right.
No, nothing that grand, believe you me. And now I've joined the FSB as their development manager, and it's a fascinating new chapter in my very varied career.
Absolutely.
But one that is essential. The small businesses are the backbone of the economy. And there's this great, I encourage everyone to read it. It's a short book called I, Pencil.
Right, okay.
I, Pencil.
It's a description of a pencil. And if one person was to go and make a pencil themselves, it would cost a fortune.
Yep.
And it details all the different components, all the different business inputs. Yeah. And when you realise that if everything that you interact with on a daily basis, 95% of it is input from small businesses at one part of the chain or another.
Yeah.
You go to the local shop, it's a small business. And we're in this transformation of how we work and whether we do hybrid working in the office or just work from home. And I'm quite optimistic that the high street, I think, will see a renaissance. mm-hmm. because people aren't commuting in.
Yep.
If they're going out for lunch, they're going to
their local.
The local pub or local restaurant. And I'm optimistic. I mean, we published our small business index, and optimism for businesses in the southeast is on the up.
Yeah,
it's not on the up across the board. There are some regions where it's dipped a bit, but I am almost taken aback because all I hear in the news is doom and gloom and everything's terrible. But yet I'm hearing from our members that they're doing well.
Yeah,
and they're succeeding. And there is a remarkable resilience to the small business community that despite everything, despite that all, they're still confident and optimistic and growing. And you know, it's a pleasure to work for them because we are a membership organisation. Sure. Yeah. You as the members, you're the boss, you're in charge.
Yeah.
But to be their voice. And so I've been getting about with as many stakeholders as possible to put the voice of the small businesses forward and work with people and see what we can do for our members.
Do you know what? I'm totally with you on this, Tim. I am absolutely 100% with you in this about the high street. It drives me bonkers when governments especially start these schemes that go save the high street. Yeah, no. It's evolving, and you know, nothing's static. Nothing in this world stays the same. You know, otherwise our high streets would still be populated with horse stables and coaching inns. Yeah, it evolves, and certain retail places are no longer viable because we buy more of our stuff online, and it's cheaper and more effective, and all the rest of it. But there's still a lot of things that happen in the high street. You know, food and drink. I did.
Hair.
Well, I tried to start an online tattoo parlor, but that just didn't work. Yeah. I don't know why.
Well, I'm in an inject printer.
I was thinking about buying some new sunglasses, and in the old days, I just pop into Topshop, you know, and try a couple on. And you have to try sunglasses on, you know. And of course, Topshop isn't there, so they were my sort of go-to cheap ones that you could sort of, you know, throw around on the table when you've had a few glasses of wine. Didn't matter if you left the restaurant and forgot them, which we often do. But that isn't there anymore. Mm. Little monsoon gone.
But if you say being gone, there's also an opportunity there, and there's a vacuum that something will fill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's the case that you know our economy and market economics is dynamic.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
With the crisis, there is an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and it's how you know it's Sue's business where the change was there was a market for hand sanitizer. Your business evolved and developed.
Yeah. She jumped
people
to
are
it.
Seeing now that with different ways of working, there are more opportunities there.
Yeah.
So I remain optimistic.
Absolutely.
But the problem is, as we've alluded to, the government getting in the way and imposing new taxes, new charges, and making it difficult.
Yeah, well, exactly.
When I was recently in Shoreditch, and the number of offices to let were just empty, but. And the government keeps saying we've got to get back to London. But there are, as you say, the small, normal high streets where we all live that we can support while we're working from home or working at a hot desk, you know, area. We don't all have to commute into London.
Exactly. But then someone with a business mind will look at all of these office spaces that are to let and think, well, there's a catastrophic housing crisis in London.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Let's convert these.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually saw... what are they called? The big property company, Land Securities. They own one of the massive Canary Wharf buildings that's just been completed and has never been occupied, and they've started saying we're going to have to convert these into apartments. Yeah, because we're never going to shift it as an office. So exactly,
they'll make a fortune.
That's
the dynamism of the market.
And I think what you've said, Tim, is absolutely true. It is a dynamic market, and we need to stop trying to hold on to things and stopping them evolving, which is the problem we have all the time. Is people make it harder to evolve by starting these schemes that purport to save things. When they don't need saving, they need evolving. One of the interesting things, I don't know if you've come across this in the FSB, but during the pandemic, early on, we spoke to a number of organisations in Kent, technology organisations, that were offering help to get small retailers online.
Yeah.
Yeah, small local shops.
E-commerce and stuff. Yeah.
And it was, they were dealing with retailers that had deliberately through fear or lack of knowledge, not gone that route,
yeah.
but were now left with no choice. And the amount of people that were put on to selling online who then went, I'm not going back because this works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, they although they were forced into it, they've suddenly realised actually by letting their business evolve, it actually works.
Yeah. I was saying to my local independent health shop, I was in there and they've got beautiful cleaning products and, you know, everything that you could possibly want. Teapole. And I said to her, I would love it if you were online because, A, if I come into Whitstable, I've got to drive if I want to schlep it all home because I'm buying, you know, flagons of laundry, detergent and whatever, and eco 20, that.
And 20 bottles of Prosecco.
Yeah. It's a health shop, Paul Andrews. And
healthy Prosecco.
And your echinacea and all that stuff. So she said, oh, no, we're shopkeepers. She said, we're not going online. I said, but if I drive in, A, at the weekend when I would come in, it's packed, all the tourists in Whitstable. And B, I've got to pay to park in my own town to schlep it home. So I'm going to go either to another farmer's market where I can drive in and park and get my eco products, or I need to buy online. But she was, yeah, she
wouldn't
have it.
But then there'll be the hybrid. It's not a case of one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that is the problem. Mm. If people, for instance, knew more about the Amazon model, where it's not Amazon selling, they're the middleman.
They're
sorting out getting it from A to B.
Yeah,
It's all small businesses
yeah.
that are using a facility there to reach a wider audience.
So a bit like Epsy then, for crafts people and jewellery people.
Yeah, but the problem that you've hit the nail on the head there, again, it's with government getting in the way, ridiculous parking charges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this is the whole problem. Right, they don't look at the dynamic effects of the economy.
Yeah,
if you have you have more businesses coming in, paying rates, doing well, that increases the coffers for the local authority.
Yeah,
you levying a parking charge frightens customers away. People leave the area. Suddenly, your income drops as a local authority.
Yeah.
And this is goes to the wider effect of what the government are trying to do on national insurance contributions.
Yeah.
If you increase the cost of employing someone, fewer people will be employed.
Right.
We already have a vacancies crisis where people are crying out for people to come and work for them.
Yeah.
And you've made it more difficult.
Yeah.
That's fewer people paying national insurance, fewer people paying income tax, fewer people putting their wages back in the local economy.
And more people on benefits.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, so absolutely.
It's just the economics of the madhouse.
Yeah.
And you'd think they'd know from doing it time and time and time again. You know, insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting a different outcome.
Exactly. It's funny. Jules and I had an episode a few months ago.
Of ranting.
We ganged up on Canterbury City Council. It cost me 18 quid a day to park to go to work.
Yeah. Right?
Which is insane. Yeah.
In Canterbury.
In Canterbury.
And they're building on the car parks.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Well, they sold two of the car parks off. Anyway, we ganged up on the leader of the council to give him a kick in. And it's exactly as you described, Tim. What they do is they look in isolation.
Yeah.
Their problem as a council is that they don't get business rates. Business rates goes direct to the government, and then the government gives them a stipend, and it wasn't enough. So they make all of their money from car parking. So they put all the car parking prices up without, you know, and we're saying, but do you realise that you're stopping customers coming in?
Exactly.
You're stopping tourists coming in because it's too expensive to park here, you know. And
there are more innovative ways of looking at it. Preston Council created, if you Google it, it's called the Preston Model.
Mm.
And it is fascinating because they have broken down their contracts to the smallest possible to comply with European procurement legislation.
Mm.
And what that has done, I'll give you an example. So the sandwiches in the schools, they haven't tendered for sandwiches, they've tendered for bread. They've
for
tendered
what?
For cheese.
Bread. Oh, for bread and cheese.
Yeah. So the contracts are smaller.
Excellent.
So locals can tender for them.
Excellent. So your local your local cheese maker.
Exactly. Because when I was a councillor, I had a correspondence with some constituents and they got this letter from a company in Liverpool that wanted access to their home to maintain the boiler. And obviously they were right to be concerned.
Mm.
I was thinking, why is this authority in Essex having a company in Liverpool maintain the boilers? It just doesn't make sense when there's plenty of local firms that could do it. And if you were to break it down in different wards, different companies do it different
about
wards.
The logic of it, your service companies have a much greater chance of getting a contract from their local council than a product manufacturer like us. Because, you know, yes, somebody's going to do the painting and decorating, they're at least they're likely to use somebody local.
They could if they their procurement systems worked. Yeah.
Well, we're going back to my little cafe on Tankerton Seafront using a company from Hastings. Yeah. How frustrating for her when it's leaking, she's got a business to run, and they're in Hastings.
I made an awful lot of alcohol gel last year.
Sue's waving the product.
And I am positive that the London Borough of Bromley bought an awful lot of alcohol gel last year.
Yeah.
But they didn't buy any of it from me.
Yeah.
No. Exactly. They probably bought it from China.
Yeah.
Yours from China.
Yeah. Quite possibly, but it's unlikely. But no, more likely, they went and bought the Purell one that comes in from America.
Yeah.
Or really?
France or, you know, they're the market leaders in alcohol gel.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's and they have contracts for their cleaning products with probably an organisation up in Leicestershire, near Rutland.
Yeah.
which is one of the largest local government procurement organisations in the country.
Yeah. There is an opportunity there. I know everyone is quick to blame Brexit for all of the problems and ills, but with the procurement legislation, with a free hand there now, the government can actually bias in favour of some local small businesses by giving local authorities the freedom to give an advantage. We don't even need to give an advantage, just a fair playing field.
Absolutely.
And that's
really
one thing.
A fair playing field, exactly.
That's what I'm looking at for next year.
Yeah.
You know, to reach out to the local authorities. I've got some meetings already in place to find out how the opportunities for procurement for small businesses and their local authorities can be matched up.
I mean, to have a little bit of fairness, one of the problems with the public sector procurement is that we do need to make sure that it's being done above board.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, you don't want various councillors or council officials or government officials giving a contract to their mate or their brother.
That, I can tell you from my experience, that is, considering how complicated and different agencies involved in that, everyone likes to accuse brown envelopes exchanging hands.
That doesn't happen.
The problem is the complexity of it. So, I'll give you, for instance, if a contract was over a certain euro threshold, and if I remember right, it was about 300,000 and some change. It would have to go in the official journal of the European Union.
Yeah.
So to get, if you're a small business, you wouldn't know where to start with that.
Yeah.
If you're a big multinational, you've got the legal arm, you've got the experts there that can fill it, know what forms to fill out, who to send them to.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, that instead of this net of the cast wide, where you could take every single business possible into your tender field, you've only got three or four.
Yeah.
Which is why you have the big giants now that control everything.
Yeah.
It's become an oligopoly instead of a free market.
Exactly. Oligopoly, I do like that word. Remember that one.
During the pandemic, one of our local London councils looked at a scheme for installing alcohol hand sanitizer in their communal areas, shopping areas, and that sort of thing. And that went to tender. And we make tenders. So we actually took it down and spent quite a lot of time. It was only a relatively low value contract. So, but the problem from my perspective is I make the alcohol gel. The tender encompassed the alcohol gel, the dispensers.
Are they the foot dispensers? Because I think they're brilliant.
I've no idea. They didn't give me the details.
Right.
But they wanted a proposal for installing these dispensers and also having them emptied every night.
Oh, gosh, that's some...
And this was all part of the same thing.
Hang on, they have to empty them.
If it was the Preston model where they could break it down.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there is literally nothing stopping a local authority from doing that.
Yeah.
But also, don't forget that in amongst the requirements to even get your tender in, you had to publish your equality policy, your environmental policy, your... You know, are you ISO 9000 registered?
It's enough to put anybody off.
Yeah. And every single tender requires slightly different operations.
Yeah.
I mean, the big one in local authorities is what other contracts like ours have you got to prove that you're able to do it?
That's like saying we can't. For job work experience. Well, you need experience to get the work experience.
Yeah.
The same thing applies in public tenders.
Yeah.
But there are people out there. That will put it together.
That's what we need.
There was the property and construction event we've got on Thursday, where the events we have will be to take the knowledge away to be able to battle the grant application.
So somebody will talk you through it or help you fill out this?
At the property event, we've got experts there. We'll talk about what investors are looking for and what grants are available and to talk.
What kind of property is this then? Retail property?
It's all sorts of property. Okay. Yeah. All sorts of property. But there are lots of people. We've gone beaten up the local authorities a bit, but there are people there that I've had conversations with that are open to this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And again, we're in a transformational period, and they're looking at this now and thinking, hang on.
Yeah. You
know, Preston's done it.
Mm.
They don't have to be the first.
Yeah.
So and they've shown that it's worked.
Yeah.
So, I'm generally optimistic that we can make this work.
I think for me, as a small business owner of quite a few years, for me, you quite often, I mean, we went through a thing, it was a bit hilarious, a couple of years ago, Kent County Council announced that they were going to be sourcing as much as they could from local people.
Mm.
And, I know, at the meeting to announce it, they used a Putney-based PR company to do the announcement. And, of course, we all fell about laughing, went, yeah, right-o. And one of the problems is with politicians, they quite often sit down and go, do you know what, we ought to do something about this. And they waffle about it, yeah, but the actual systems below that and the actual processes don't really change. And one of the things that struck me while we were talking about this is, and I think this is a big thing with micro and small businesses, they look at all of this, and yes, they could hire someone to do it for them, but they go, do you know what, I can't be bothered. If I spent more time just selling to Sue rather than trying to sell to XYZ Council, I'll just sell it to Sue.
But to be honest, that is the problem with a lot of all forms of large procurement.
Yeah, yeah.
Is nearly all the procurement officers will take the easy approach.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why, you know, I'm pre-qualified, apparently, to become a supplier of cleaning products to various people in the Northwest.
Yeah.
Because I actually filled in all these blasted forms and got pre-approved.
Yeah.
But all the tenders that come from that include things like local delivery.
Mm.
Or they want a load of paper as well, which I don't make. And you've got to go for the whole tender or not at all.
Yeah.
So there is a company that we always know will win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how they're set up with all the local. They're a big multinational.
Yeah.
And they're set up with all the local depots.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is no point in us going in for these tenders, to be frank.
Yeah, sure.
Because, you know, we're not going to. It's a lot of time.
So, Tim, is it worth you talking to Cumbria? It was Cumbria, wasn't it? No, Preston, yeah. Sorry. I'm thinking about Cumbrian pork sausages.
as you know.
Yeah. Over lunchtime.
Yeah, yeah.
I started off with Melton Mowbray. But is it worth you bringing in Preston to talk to Kent County Council, for example? Is that what you're going to do?
It's early stages, but it's certainly something that I'm considering because they've shown that it works.
And yeah.
With a new dynamic approach to it, yes, it's going to be hard work, but if you look at the transformative policies that have changed the country, they've been hard work, but they've also been necessary. You don't want to get dragged to the point where you have to do it and it's too late to turn the boat around.
Mm. Yeah.
You want to do it now where businesses are evolving. You can actually do something that wouldn't cost an extra penny.
Yeah.
This is the thing. Mm-hmm. It's not the cost that's the deterrent, it's the willpower.
Yeah, exactly. And there's all kinds of things behind that. Funnily enough, here on Channel Radio, we've quite often spoken to people from the local town council, and Ashford has, dare I say it, had a very good few years in terms of developing things here. Yeah, they had a crop of councillors that really did want to make a difference and actually did, yeah, which is quite rare, yeah. But they really did turn the town around. The problem for those of us that live here now is the town has quadrupled in size in the last 5 years, yeah. But you know, Ashford is now bigger than Middlesbrough. We have a bigger population than Middlesbrough.
God.
It is spread out a bit more, but But a lot of that is based on the success of the council doing things, yeah?
Yeah.
So all power to them. And Graham Galpin, who was very involved
place changer
on Twitter. In high streets and stuff like that when he was a councillor. He's retired now, but made a massive difference to the things that were going on here. So you're absolutely right, Tim. It's about the willpower to do it. Mm. It's not about the processes or the procedures or any of those things. It's really about the willingness to actually get in there and look at it and do something.
But going back to the bread and the cheese, going back to basics, they're going to get a much better quality food than if they have Rentokil doing the school sandwiches or whatever.
Absolutely. Do you want locally produced food or an Anthrax sandwich?
Exactly. Yeah. It's incredible.
But what about value for money?
Yeah.
That's the other problem.
Yeah.
That if you're going... I mean, I agree with you. It's how you count it.
There is an argument there. Okay. Let's say, for instance, there is a 10% difference in price if you go from the multinational providing bulk sandwiches or the breakdown for using local. You know that local is money going back into the local economy being spent in other businesses.
Yeah.
That is also businesses paying rates.
Yeah.
And that is businesses paying taxes. If you're giving that money to a company that isn't in the local area, the money's not being spent there. It might not even come back in the general taxation.
But the problem you've then got to do is you've got to change the whole approach of local authorities to their bookkeeping.
Yeah.
Because they are graded on what is the headline cost.
Mm. Well, lots of them already are in the financial doldrums. So again, it just says this is a tight period of necessity.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, I thoroughly approve of the idea. It's just that I'm also aware of where some of the...
Yeah. Sue's on the other side trying to get...
It's all the yes minister saying, that's very brave, minister.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly it.
But for me, that is the focal point of all of this, is that, and you said it earlier, Sue, and you're absolutely right, it's a fear. It's unwilling to push the boat out. And they go, why don't we just do it as we've always done
it? There is an interesting case study from your own council in Sevenoaks, where they've actually invested so much money in different businesses that in about 25 years' time, council tax is going to be negligible.
Yeah.
Only if those businesses succeed.
Well, that's
and if you consider that they can't even manage their leisure centre.
That's another programme. That's a 3-hour show.
And also, if we're thinking about that, why have they recently increased their town centre car parking
fees?
Hours.
Yeah.
To 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I'm not here to defend Sevenoaks.
What I'm saying is there's a lack of business nous going on in an awful lot of local government.
Well, we know that. You'll find that because if they fail, the bank of the taxpayer turn to, rather than their actual financial restraint, which would see them actually, if they bankrupt the council, they should be disqualified from working for another local authority again.
Or
not going to a higher paid job at another authority.
Yeah. But that's why, that was the point I was making about what makes them think they can succeed if they buy businesses in the local area.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed in Kent, certainly, is lots of people that are councillors and involved in local politics are actually business people. But you get this kind of effect that people get inertia when they get into an organisation like that, for all the reasons you've just mentioned, you know, so the local accounting, local procedures, local policies, and you can imagine they go...
Those meetings.
Well, but you go, right, I'm only going to do this for 3 years and it's going to take me 20 years to undo this. Do you know what? I'll just go with it. It's easier to go with it. And they throw out, you know, we had an argument, I'm not going to name it because it's not fair, but we had an argument with the leader of Canterbury Council, who's a very successful local businessman.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and no amount of trying to point out to him that charging me 18 quid to park my car is going to put people off. Mm. Yeah. you know, because it was all, but we need the money,
It's very short-sighted.
Yeah, but, we all need money, but you know, government are the only people that can magic it out of thin air.
The rest they can't. They're magicking out of your pocket, and your pocket, and my pocket.
Well, when I go to Canterbury now, you know, there used to be a really nice little independent gift shop there with, you know, I get really unusual cards instead of going to the Cards R Us or whatever. Really nice gifts and that. And of course, during the pandemic, it's just gone. And for me now going into Canterbury, there's not much there. There's no Monsoon, there's no Top Shop, there's no.
There is a Seven Bone Burger Bar.
There is, apparently. There is. You can eat and drink in Canterbury. But really, you know, even when I go to Phoenix now, the cafe is closed in Phoenix. Did you know that, Paul Andrews?
No.
So Carluccio's has gone. And then the little cafe that was just by the bus station, completely gone. So I went there a week ago, you know, thought I'll have an alfresco, whatever. Like a ghost town. Yeah. Lots of shops boarded up. So we need to do something. And Tankerton High Street, where I am, and I must bring you down for a couple of bottles of something rather.
Don't go there, Tim.
But we've got a regeneration of Tankerton High Street. We've got architect-built flats for people. Underneath, they've put shops. So it's great. You know, you're getting a bustle there. And we were all upset when all the old shops were being, you know, pulled down. But actually, it looks very she and great. So we've got now two cafes that have opened. We've got... We've also got a long-standing pet shop. We've got a flower shop. So it's, you know, happening. We lost our bakers, which was sad. We've got a butcher's. Amazing. But this little restaurant that I go into that I've just been supporting, it's a one-off. Great food. It's called Land and Sea, I think it's called. And Ben, the chef, is great. But they've only got a really small space for covers inside. So I'm having a meeting with him this week. Because how is he going to cope in winter? He's got to pay rent, probably extortionate, to the landlord. He's only got probably, I think, six covers inside. Great at the weekend, this weekend. Everybody's out al fresco ordering, but what happens to him? So I'm wondering if there's grants, if anybody would support him to get some sort of canopy and some heating, because all that costs a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean... But again, we're back to this point where you're trying to finance everything through taxation. Yeah, because someone's got to pay for it eventually.
Where does this grant money come from that, you know, small businesses can get?
Where everything else comes from the taxpayer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they've spent billions in grants from central government. Billions.
Yeah.
But in local government's defence, as you mentioned, Paul, they have to give up a lot of their business rates.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And only get a fraction of it back. And central government mandates they have to provide X number of services without a guarantee that they're going to get the money to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then they're left with the choice of, well, we actually are mandated to do X.
Yeah.
And we haven't got the money for it.
Mm.
So I do understand the predicament they're in.
Mm.
But then this is the problem of not thinking strategically when the times were good.
Yeah.
That they could have built up their coffers so where they don't have to make these choices.
But I think most of the local authorities, and I'm thinking of Kent County Council, I believe, have some of the largest financial reserves. I mean, didn't they lose an awful lot of it temporarily during the Icelandic bank crash?
Yeah, yeah.
They lost millions.
Yeah.
But they've still got, they got them back, I believe. But they've still got huge financial reserves.
Mm.
Now, why aren't they, at this time of terrible economic strife, spending them?
Yeah.
Good question.
Mm. And for me, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole because it's such a big thing, and we're only 5 minutes away from the end of the show, and there's some other things I want to talk to Tim about. And we've got loads of interaction on Twitter. There's literally hundreds of tweets with people joining in on this. A lot of them very interesting but for me, one of the problems is as a society, we don't pay a lot of attention to local politics. You know, if you ask the average person who their local councillor is, they wouldn't have a clue. And I think that's a mistake because, for me, the things that affect you every day locally where you live are far more important than what government does at the top end. Because, you know, whilst what government does is important, to try and influence that is really difficult. And I think so many local authorities don't lack the conjones to actually stand up to central government and go, we can't do that. We haven't got any money because you took it all. Yeah. Now, if you know, the whole thing is about business rates. If I'm really honest, I have no idea why central government has to take business rates from people. You know, why can't it stay locally as part of the funding of local?
Because if you allow local authorities to set the level of business rates and keep the money, what happened in the 70s and 80s was that certain councils with, shall we say, left-wing tendencies ramped up business rates because the businesses don't have a vote.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that was when, I'm not sure if it was in Maggie's days or whenever.
It was Liverpool. Yeah. It was Liverpool under Degsy Hatton.
Yeah, and some parts of, and Camden in London.
Yeah.
So that was the reason why the government... Okay, over time, the councils lost out because no business would set up there. And they would set up in the lower rates areas. But that was the logic. And as I say, the problem is, whichever way you do it, you're going to end up with one of these problems.
Yeah, of course. You know, nothing has an easy solution. That's the problem.
And that's the problem. Just if I could have the last word on this. That is the problem, right? Everyone expects miracles.
Yeah.
And to go through any sort of decision or any sort of process, there are going to be bumps in the road.
Yeah. And we've had a few bumps this year.
You've just got to look at them and see them as a challenge, not as the end, as doom and gloom, but as something that you can overcome. And a bit of optimism actually goes.
We need to move forward,
Yeah, and compromise. You know, you can't have everything. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have to compromise on things.
Tim, just remind us when your property conference is.
It's this Thursday at 8 a.m.
Where?
Online.
Online. Okay. Oh, it's a Zoomie.
If you go to the FSB website and the events page, you'll be able to register. It's completely free.
Yep.
Members and non-members all welcome.
Brilliant. Yep.
And there's a link to it on the Kent Business Radio website as well under the FSB tab. So just look for there. Tim, I just want to finish off. We're almost at the end of the show. Just where you see things going for the FSB locally in terms of... membership. I lost track of kind of how many members we had. We had a lot in Kent, one of the biggest regions I know. I mean, you've only been in situ, what, 6 weeks?
Something 2 months. 2 months and some change. It's been a roller coaster, an enjoyable one. And we're already picking up.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. It's great.
I'd be glad to be back.
Yeah.
Because it's a fantastic radio station reaching the type of audience that we want to reach. So it's a nice partnership. But I see us building stronger relationships with the authorities, the stakeholders, and seeing how our members can benefit from what's out there. You know, as you mentioned, the London Resort Hub, we're working with them, and lots of our members are registered with them.
Yeah.
There'll be one for the Lower Thames Crossing as well.
Yeah.
So there's lots of ways we want to actually build on the work that's already being done, but create those partnerships where if you join the FSB, you don't just get the benefits of our free legal service and FSB care and all the other benefits, but there's a way for your business to actually benefit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, thank you so much for spending the time talking to us. We will have you back again.
I think there's a
Tim and Sue show.
Yeah.
Oh, what a good idea.
Tim and Sue.
What a good idea.
Tim and Sue, we could call it Over the Moon, couldn't we?
Yeah.
And then Paul and I can just loll in the corner and
absolutely.
Heckle.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim Acker, Business Development Manager for FSB Kent and Medway, thank you so much for being on the Business Bunker Show. We're almost at the end of the show. There's hundreds of tweets coming in over the things we've been talking about. I just want to mention this one because he's new to Twitter. It's George from Orchard Employment Law. He says, listening to the Business Bunker right now, I'm a newbie to the show and enjoying every minute. Could we get a shout out for Orchard Employment Law, please? Yes, of course you can. Lisa Settle, the lovely Lisa Settle, saying, you do like a bit of cheesy tunage on the channel radio. Yeah, we do. Amanda has sent a really funny gif of a car falling apart based on our conversation we were having earlier, and she says, watch out, they're now doing they don't make them like they used to conversations.
Paragon Drones, thank you for a fantastic show today. Great discussion that impacts on so many of your audiences, and they are on paragondrones.co.uk.
Yeah, Tracy Ferguson said, we visited Tunbridge Wells for the first time in 2 years last week and were shocked by the amount of empty shops, many of them small retailers. I bought some ex-display shelves and a mannequin, as you do.
I'd love a mannequin.
From a lovely man who'd been there for over 40 years and couldn't afford to renew the lease. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's sad to see that.
And there's lots and lots more. Tracy's saying, fabulous interviews. Love the passion from different perspectives. There's a Sue and Tim show.
Yeah.
Yay. Exactly.
And I need
it here first.
I need to just call out this mental health first aid training and short workshops, because we promised we would. It's about making mental health matter. Never have we needed this more. You can go to www.westkentmind.org.uk/training, or you can email training@westkentmind.org.uk, and it will be on Kent Business Radio website.
We've kind of reached the end of another show almost.
Let me just say that there are workshops, short workshops and accredited ones, because we promised we'd read that out, Paul.
Yeah,
Andrew.
And you have.
Yes.
Which is good. So thank you. I think I've got something that needs doing as well. Yeah, the King's Summit is going ahead as a live event in less than 8 weeks on the 14th of October. The Kent Event Centre, Dentlin, and you are invited. In past years, business owners seeking wisdom and fresh insights to grow their business have found this one to be one of the most valuable days in the business calendar. You can find out all about it by going to their website, which is www.thekingssummit.com. And Simon Teague, who's one of the organisers, will be on the Bunker Extra show in a week or so's time and talk about it in more detail. But we've reached the end of another Business Bunker show. I want to say a huge thank you to our two fantastic guests who now have their own programme on this channel.
Sue and Tim.
Yeah.
Over the moon.
The lovely Sue Moon of Teapole Products, and the equally lovely Tim Acker of the FSB Kent and Medway. I want to say a huge thank you to my gorgeous co-host, the lovely Jill Serkin. Thank you to everybody that participated, that tweeted, that emailed and that joined in the conversation.
And I think the Rye Festival's on, isn't it, at the moment? I've been seeing little snippets from there.
The Rye Arts Festival is on. The Tenterton Folk Festival is on. There's loads of things happening in the region, so do follow all of them. You can hear the Business Bunker Extra Show this Thursday when Jules takes over the mantle for this week, talking to Mark Lumsford-Taylor of the Rural Policy Group.
Rural Policy, yeah, we had a little chinwag.
Yeah, did you mention solar panels to him?
I did. I mentioned rather a lot of things, actually.
Yeah, I bet you did. Yeah, did he get a word in edgewise?
Building over farmland is my big thing, which is happening all over Kent.
Yeah, well, Mark is chair of the policy group for Rural Policy Group, who are an organisation that are looking at rural policy.
And he wants to do regular little shows.
Yeah, but they're a national organisation looking at rural issues nationally, not just locally. But you can hear that interview with Jules and Mark this Thursday at 1 o'clock on the Business Bunker Show, on the Business Bunker Extra Show. But that's it for another week. We'll be back next week.